This is Jim Eagster. Coming today, we will talk with Major General Ronald G. Richard, retired U.S. Marine Corps officer, last served as the commanding general of the Marine Corps base at Camp Lejeune. We will talk with General Richard about his tenure in the Marines and with the Tiger Athletic Foundation. He's been the president and CEO of the Tiger Athletic Foundation for 13 years. Great success in football under Nick Saban and Les Miles during the general's time at LSU as the leader of TAF. And there's another expansion of Tiger Stadium ongoing, as well as a multi-million dollar nutrition center for athletes that's being constructed. And we will talk with the general about matters of war and football. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Eagster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 locally outside this area. And the number is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is Major General Ronald G. Richard, a man who served this country at the highest levels of the armed forces with the U.S. Marine Corps, served in Vietnam and in the Persian Gulf War. And 13 years ago, he came back to Louisiana State University. We'll talk with him about what's going on at LSU, of course. And mind you, in the last 12 years, LSU on the football field has had 12 winning seasons, 4 SEC titles, 2 BCS championships. 12 years prior to that, LSU had 8 losing seasons in 12 years. So I credit it all to you, the turnaround, General Richard.
I don't believe that that's warranted, Jim. Thank you, though.
But we've talked about this before. It's been a while since you've been on the program. When you left the Marine Corps after 33 years, you had many offers, as big Fortune 500 companies like to have people such as you in their midst. You chose to come back home to your alma mater.
I did, and it was a conscious choice. My wife and I are both from South Louisiana. Grew up on LSU football and LSU in general, and that was my goal, to come back home, and happy that I did.
And we've talked about your odyssey as a man who was a young fellow from Bazille, Louisiana, and you ended up in the LSU ROTC program, graduated in 1968, and most members of your generation were getting draft deferments, if they could. You volunteered. Why?
I'm often asked that question by my friends that that are very good friends of mine now, and those that didn't volunteer continue to be my friends, and I certainly respect their decision at the time. For me, it was a bit different. That was what I was expected to do in my own mind, and it's as simple as that. An expectation that a young man should go to the sounds of the gun if your country calls for you.
This was 1968. We're talking the heat of the Vietnam War, and you could have gone to grad school, you could have done a few things to delay the process, or perhaps not do it at all, as most members of your generation did. But you said, hey, I'm in. What did your family think of that?
Well, my father was a Marine. He understood. My mother was not too pleased, but she accepted it. She knew from early on that that's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. When I entered LSU, my intention was to get a commission. I majored in history, did very well in history. Didn't do very well in the other subjects. Had a wonderful time at LSU. Some people say too wonderful a time. But I graduated and got a commission, and off I went to Vietnam.
1968, you must have been 21, right at 22.
I was 20, I believe I was 20 and turned 21 that fall. I graduated in the summer.
All right. So you're more than a decade older than I am. And, you know, I'd like to think I would have been like Ron Richard and volunteered and fought for our country, but I don't know. The peer pressure then was such that most members did not. And this is quite a contrast to World War II. We've had people like Jack Germond on this show, graduated from Baton Rouge High in 45. He said he couldn't wait to get in the armed forces before the war ended. He wanted to fight because that was the mindset for World War II. Something happened between World War II and Vietnam. What was that?
Pacification. Simple as that. Looking out for yourself. The difference between World War II, in my view, and Vietnam was that the news media put it on every night, and most of the news was bad. So it's akin to just human nature. Do I want to go into that room where I'll get hurt, or do I want to go to that room where I can read a book?
And you've commented, when you came back, decorated veteran, certainly saw death and probably were close to death at times in your service in Southeast Asia. You went to a college campus and a college professor disrespected you. What did he do?
It was a lady.
It was a lady.
A lady at the University of Virginia. I was in a cafeteria with several international officers. I was waiting to take my major billet job, if you will. And I was just doing something to kill time. I was an escort officer. And we were in a cafeteria, and she approached me with her tray of food. It was a cafeteria akin to Piccadilly. And she blurted out some names I can't mention on the radio here, and she threw the food on me. And quite frankly, I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't do much of anything. I just kind of stood there and took the food off of me. And once she did that, she turned and walked away.
And you were in uniform?
I was in uniform, yeah. Mm. It was different then. It was different. And I don't belabor that. I really don't. It was completely different. The world was different. The United States was different. But I tell you, all of us that experienced things like that, I was not the only one. We took that as a badge of honor, and we went on. And as I got older in the Marine Corps, I would seek these people out, and I would challenge them, not physically, but challenge them to a verbal contest. Right. Mm-hmm. Just to make them feel like they were not as great as they were 20 years prior when they did acts like that.
Well, in your heart of hearts, do you think that you're a cut above some of those who cut and ran during Vietnam?
No, I really don't. Because as I get older, I'm much older now. I would have rather Vietnam not happening. I would have rather Iraq not happening, a Desert Storm, Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. This insidious disease now that has always been present with us, PTSD, was around back then. We didn't know what it was, but it affects young men and now women, but predominantly men. In the after years. And I have friends right now that were in Vietnam with me that are not well, and they're being diagnosed with that same thing. So the long and the short of it is, if you have to, we must. If you don't have to, the politicians need to find another way.
Do you have any flashbacks?
No.
No? You have memories, though.
I have memories, but no flashbacks.
And some of those memories, I'm sure, are triumphant, glorious, and others are tragic.
It's memories like everybody else would have, good ones, bad ones, indifferent ones, some you'll never forget. In my TV room at my home, I'm surrounded by military pictures. and their military pictures of young Marines, not glorious pictures, just young Marines that can be glorious, but these happen to do, but waiting around, just young men sitting on their helmets, and things that are mostly the routine and mundane part of combat.
1968, that was the year. You served under Nixon and Ford and Carter and Reagan and first Bush, President Clinton. Probably some presidents you voted for and others you didn't. But when you're in the Marines or the Army or the Air Force or the Navy or the Coast Guard, it really doesn't matter whether a Democrat or a Republican is in the White House, does it?
Well, I think if you're an American, it doesn't matter. But certainly it's accentuated when you're in the military because he's also the commander-in-chief. And the morale of the armed forces ebbs and flows with how the commander-in-chief addresses, treats, and the intentions that one thinks of the commander-in-chief, how he would react, is important to young people.
Well, I mentioned you served in Vietnam and in the first Persian Gulf War, but you were at the table with just a few military leaders devising strategy when the U.S. was at war in Bosnia. How was that experience? I guess you were right there with General Wesley Clark.
General Clark and several, and I was not by a long shot a very important part of that. I was a two-star general at the time. I was the deputy commander of Marine Forces Europe. But we'd have a conference call once a day, and we would go over strategy and different weaponry that would be used. We were stationed in Germany. And that was very insightful, both positively and negatively. I didn't like that type of duty.
No?
No, I didn't like it.
What did you think of General Clark?
One of the rules, Jim, is that, you know, we don't talk about general officers in public.
You're out now.
I will follow that.
You could, but his politics, I would imagine, were substantially different than yours. Did you ever even talk about that kind of thing, though? I imagine when you're sitting there at the table, it's all about how we're going to win.
Did we talk about...
You didn't talk about social issues or...
No, of course not. No, you went in there. It was very, very, very formal, very to the point. Everybody had a job to do. I had a piece of what I did, and I would report that out. In that conference room was hooked up to about 13 teleconferences, all the way down into Bosnia, Italy, all around the countries surrounding that were affected, and you had a discussion, a professional discussion.
And then that war was won without one U.S. Casualty.
That's correct. And it was meant to be that way. Very difficult war. Very complicated war. Wars that have to do with religious feelings and ethnic backgrounds are invariably never won. They're stopped, but they're invariably never won by one side or the other.
We're visiting with Major General Ron Richard, a remarkable man, 33 years with the U.S. Marine Corps, commander of the 10th Marine Division, right?
10th Marine Regiment.
And a guy who served in Vietnam, the Persian Gulf War, received the Distinguished Service Medal, the Defense Superior Service Medal, Legion of Merit. Last 13 years, he's been the CEO of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, and we'll move to that topic after a few more observations about his experiences with the United States Marine Corps. General Ron Richard, pride of Basile, Louisiana, and man who runs one of the major entities in this community, TAF, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Major General Ron Richard is the guest, and he is orchestrating a major addition to Tiger Stadium again. And a multi-million dollar nutrition center is springing up for athletes, and we'll talk with him about those matters. But before we dispense with experiences you had in the U.S. Marine Corps, is everything after that kind of a downer as far as the energy? I mean, life and death doesn't get more profound than that. Football is not life and death.
You know, that's a good question. Whenever I first retired, I thought it would be so different and not near as challenging. That's really not the case. It's so different. It's different. Life and death is the ultimate. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're in charge of devising a plan or leading men forward, and some are killed, and some are rewarded in tremendous ways. That's a very different feeling. But I must say that in this particular job, it is challenging. It was challenging, and it still is. And I'm fortunate to leave the Marine Corps and go to a job that I absolutely had passion for. Now, I believe, and hearing from friends, those that leave the Marine Corps in such a challenging position mm-hmm. and go to a job that there's no passion for, their life is not the same as mine. So I'm fortunate.
Okay. Well, this will be the last thing we do regarding my questions to the general about his military experience. And just to put things in perspective for those who were not there or those who were and perhaps after all these years don't remember the division as far as the school of thought about the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. General in Congressman Richard Baker graduated about the same time at LSU. The general volunteered and went to Vietnam. Congressman Baker, who served with distinction on Capitol Hill for 22 years as a member of the U.S. Congress, he was like most Americans of that vintage, most American men. He was very pleased that he did not have to serve. Here's how he responded many years ago.
I was in LSU's ROTC. I was in my sophomore year. And if I had gone back the following fall and signed up, assuming I could have passed all the subsequent academic requirements, I would have been a second lieutenant. As it turned out, I took my chances in the draft. And I can remember quite vividly that night when the media cut off the coverage of the lottery at number 100. I knew they were going to call more than 100. And I wanted to know if I was 101. I was at the Pack-a-Sack on Hooper Road at 4 o'clock in the morning waiting on the paper boy. And when I saw number 326, I knew where I was.
Now, it'd be unfair to call him a draft dodger, but he certainly was very pleased that he did not have to go to Southeast Asia. Any thoughts about that? His mentality as opposed to yours?
I'm sure his mentality was the same as mine. Trying to get through LSU, having a great time, and not get put on any type of probation. Now, as far as the draft, everybody had a different opinion of that. I guess in my case, I believed in the glorious event of the bearing of arms. I believed in all of the propaganda that is put out about fighting. That's turned out to be incorrect, by the way. But at the time, I believed that. And I believe that I had a duty. Now, that's not saying that those like Richard Baker did not. I know him. I respect him. I think he did a great job in Congress. And I have many friends that come out and say, I purposely tried to avoid the draft. And I have no problem with them. That was part of the system. They took advantage of it. It was legal, and they're friends of mine today.
They just made one choice, and
it's a matter of choices. Now you take the man who went to Canada. That's a different.
You don't like that.
That's a different hour. That's a different story.
Well, I know you're charitable in assessing people who didn't do what you do, but I think there are levels. There's Canada, and then there's draft evasion, if not draft dodging, and then there's the General Richards of the world.
Just waiting on the draft is not draft dodging, I don't believe, and it's not. I don't think it's draft evasion. It's the system was what it was, and unless you felt otherwise, that's what you did. Most mm-hmm. American men waited to see where they fell, and acted accordingly. I knew many people that were drafted that did wonderful things in the Marine Corps, and were highly decorated.
Mm-hmm. You say that the propaganda was wrong. Why was it wrong?
Anytime you glorify war and you think killing another human being is something of an exhilarating thrill, although it may be for some, but by and large, it's not. It's a sickening event. The battlefield is a dirty, smelly, very not so nice place to be. You do it because you have to. Honor and glory is important, but honor and glory is a result of overcoming your fear, because if every man's true to himself in close combat, those that have close combat face-to-face, there's fear. Once you overcome that fear, then you can go on to greater and better things, and that's where the honor and glory comes from. So I am certainly very proud of my service to my country, both in combat, close combat, mm-hmm. near combat, not so close combat, all aspects of it. But at the same time, I encourage people, young people, to join the services if they're so inclined, if they want that adventure, if they want that. But it's not a John Wayne movie in which every day is a glorious, glorious day in which you receive a tremendous amount of adulation, if you will.
Well, and John Wayne served in every war except the real one.
Yes.
He was making movies. But the way you're describing it, and I can see the emotion, you probably could look the enemy in the eye the way you're looking me in the eye at some points during your experiences.
Well, I have. I didn't have the same type of combat that many, many others have. I'm no different than anybody else. I am not nearly, didn't have the experience that Artie Murphy or Chesty Puller or John Bassalone or people of that ilk. I had a normal combat tour.
But it was combat.
It was combat, yes. Mm-hmm. I've met some people that I've had battles with before, after the fact. Interesting note: at Camp Lejeune, a general from the North Vietnamese Army came to Camp Lejeune, and I was told to host him, and I did. It was a little awkward at first, and as it turned out, we were in the same battle in the northern DMZ of mm-hmm. of Vietnam. And we sat down and had a good conversation. It's amazing what maturity will do to a man.
Mm-hmm. You had children born while you were in Vietnam, right?
First child was born while I was away. Good planning, huh?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, good planning.
And as I remember, you were listening to LSU football games in Vietnam, if you can believe that. How were you doing that?
Whenever we would get to the base camp, couldn't do it out in the field because it was too heavy to hump you. Hump is a word that where you march. Mm-hmm. You had light gear. You had your E2. You had your food. You had your ammunition, and I carried a mortar as a lieutenant for my radio operator, who carried a PRC 25 radio, which is fairly heavy. But back in the base camps, which happened every month, probably once a month. You'd go back to the combat base, it was a place where you'd get mortared and rocketed, but there was little close combat. I had a footlocker there with a shortwave radio, and I would pick up WWL on Saturday nights when I was there on a Saturday night.
With the great John Ferguson.
With John Ferguson, and I would hear LSU football, and people would gather around me because they didn't have shortwave radios, and you had a lot of the SEC people in there, and we would hoot and holler whenever we weren't on watch. And I listened to LSU football and fan tales of ships throughout the world. I bought, I think, 28 shortwave radios in 33 years.
Now, there's a fan. 297-5633, HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with General Richard.
Good morning, General. What has happened or seems to have happened to our young people today as well as our young adults as it relates to duty, honor, country, discipline, personal responsibility, and respect for the laws of our country, that's reflected on the football field with so many of our players getting in trouble. What has happened, please, sir? Thank you.
Well, to answer your question, I think the quick answer is the home. The home is where you learn all of this, and I think that's where it starts. The second part of your question, the second answer, I believe, has to do with copycatting. A lot of young people tend to copycat other young people if they think they're being smart and funny. But in the long term, I believe our schools need to teach what duty, honor, country is, and the optimism that this great republic will, in fact, for all of its problems, this great republic will emerge once again as the leader of the free world, and for that matter, the leader of the world. I think that is lacking in our schooling today, starting in elementary school, middle school, high school, and certainly at our great universities.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757 for General Ron Richard. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with General Richard.
Yes, General. Do you find that people who have really experienced war, like Eisenhower, McGovern, John Kerry, Bush 41, yourself, know how horrible it is and needs to be avoided if possible, as opposed to chicken hawks like Dick Cheney and Bush 43.
If you cannot have a war, do not have a war, period. It's not something that should happen. It's against human nature. However, if you find yourself having to do that, then you need to shed those human nature qualities, if you will, and fight like hell, but still maintaining honor, still maintaining what it means to kill someone else. And that has to be done in a fashion that is within the rules and confines of warfare.
What do you think?
Tough question.
Of waterboarding.
I think anything is worth doing if it saves a life.
Did you ever have prisoners of war under your tutelage when you were?
I did. During Desert Storm, we had prisoners surrender in front of us, and you had to go disarm them. In that particular war, we lined them up, got an NCO. He was armed. He put him in a line, and he marched him to the rear. I was not involved with POWs back in the rear. I was forward. So I don't know what happened back there. But in that particular war, we were winning easily. And had so many prisoners that you had to round them up and get them out of your way, quite frankly.
Saventry writes, they say that there are no atheists in foxholes. When you were in warfare, General Richard, did you rely upon a religious belief to get you through it?
I never met an atheist in the forward trenches. I never did. There may have been some. I never met them. We prayed a lot. You pray for a couple of reasons. One reason you pray is to thank God, your God, whatever God you believe in, for your good fortunes. But most of the time you pray because you're afraid. And it's not wrong to tell your troops, if you're a leader, yes, we have a possibility of dying and there is fear, but we will overcome that fear because that's our training and that's our job, and we believe in this great republic. We're doing this for our children and our grandchildren. And we're doing this because our government says this is what we need to do. Some people criticize that. I made that statement on national TV once, and they said, this guy must be really stupid if he believes that. And I may be very stupid, but I believe that. I truly, truly believe that. And I think if more people believe that, if they found themselves, whether they were drafted or whether we will have a draft in the future or whether we you do or don't join the services, when you're faced in that situation, I think that will hold true for eternity.
We've talked briefly about this in the past, but for those who view football games as warfare, and quite often sports writers and sportscasters actually cast the games in that kind of light. Do you resent that? You've been at war. Football is not war.
No, I don't resent that. I don't resent much.
It doesn't sound like it.
I believe people can say whatever they want to say as long as you don't interfere with somebody's freedom. No, football is, in fact, not war. Now, what they mean by that, it has to do with teamwork. It has to do with intensity. It has to do with the desire to excel and to do your job. I truly believe that's what it means. They have war rooms and things of that nature. That's fine. That's fine. It's a way to put it, and it gets the young men's attention.
All right. Well, when we come back from the break, we'll get General Richard's take on what's happening now in Tigertown and about the two men who have served as football coach at LSU during his tenure as head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, Les Miles and Nick Saban. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 for General Ron Richard, head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation for the last dozen years, starting his 13th football season. And he has been at the helm during the golden age of LSU football. Two coaches during that time, Nick Saban and Les Miles. Certainly different men, different kinds of men. What do you think of those two?
Being kind when you say they're two different type of men. They're absolutely two different type, but they do the same profession. They win football games. So on a similar note, they are very, very similar in that they go about it a different way, but they win football games. Coach Saban was very intense all the time, except when he was one-on-one in a private setting. He was not intense at all. He spoke about his dog, his love of animals. We spoke about national defense. We spoke about different circumstances, world events. That was one-on-one, and we found ourselves many times one-on-one, automobiles, airplanes, things of that nature, traveling. Coach Miles is a lot more outspoken as far as with his team. He likes to speak to the team in ways to where he excites the team. He motivates that team. He is the same most of the time. He's intense, certainly with the team when he's teaching. Outside of that, he carries on normal conversations. A man that's complicated, but enjoyable. I mean, he's enjoyable.
297-5633. Tommy in Shenandoah. Tommy, you're on the air with General Ron Richard. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, how you doing? I was wondering if the general had any thoughts on Governor Jindal spending a million or so of our state tax dollars on the football fields for the poor Manning boys at the Manning Passing Academy over at Thibodaux.
I wasn't aware he spent that much money on those football fields for the Manning passing team. I'm continually surprised what the state spends money on. I do know this. The state doesn't spend very much money at LSU in proportion to what I think they should spend. And certainly, excuse me, LSU athletics, the state doesn't spend any money on LSU athletics, none whatsoever.
It's done by the Tiger Athletic Foundation almost exclusively. But as far as the university as a whole, people are losing their jobs over there. It's not a real good morale situation now. I'm sure you're not totally immune from that, even though your office is in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. You feel it, don't you?
I'm first and foremost an LSU alum, and I'm a son of Louisiana. I believe how goes LSU, how goes Louisiana. It's our flagship university. I believe that there should be more effort put in by the state to LSU and other schools also, but primarily LSU. Certainly not to inhibit it from any research that it could be doing, and certainly not to inhibit it to be known as a Tier 1 university throughout this country. I'm for LSU before I'm for anything that is part of LSU.
And the funding situation is such that you've seen it go up during your early years and now go down. That has an effect on the flagship university. And that effect sometimes is not fully felt until years down the line, is it?
It certainly is. I think the university is underfunded right now from a state point of view.
So should LSU people be down at the Capitol? Would that be appropriate before committees? People like Ron Richard, Les Miles, Johnny Jones, Paul Maneri, and King Alexander, should you be down there asking lawmakers for some relief as far as the budget, or is that something that's out of your realm?
I don't believe that the athletic administration should be down there lobbying because we get no state funds whatsoever, no student fees. We don't get anything. We start with zero every year. I believe the university officials, and they are, they have in the past and they are now. I know Dr. Alexander is keenly aware of the funding deficiencies that are evident today. I believe they should be, and I know they are. They are all the time out there.
As I mentioned, Annette, another expansion of Tiger Stadium is ongoing right now. Its capacity will be right at 100,000 a year from now, won't it?
2014, we'll open up, and it'll be finished, and it's going to be absolutely magnificent and noisy. Don't plan to carry on a lot of conversations during the football game. It's going to be unbelievable. Yes, that is funded from a bond issue. That is not state dollars. That is money that, in this particular case, Tiger Athletic Foundation has borrowed that money, and we will obviously pay it back. We borrowed money for the east side of stadium, the west side of stadium, and the south side of stadium. We don't use all of it for the stadium. We take part of that money and we build Olympic facilities. Those facilities that don't provide any revenue to the university, we use that borrowed money. The rest of the things that happen at LSU involving athletics is all philanthropic. We raise the money philanthropic. And that is going quite well now. I mean, all of the other things you see is philanthropic money. What does that mean? That means people give money. They receive priority points, and they direct where the money goes. If you direct a dollar to go to the tennis facility, which is a good example, that dollar will go to the tennis facility. It will not be used to buy a pencil or paper or pay my salary or anything of that nature. Donor intent is a byword, a buzzword that we pay a lot of attention to. 100% of the money that is given to LSU athletics is used for LSU athletics, 100%.
Now, the budget now is what, over $100 million a year?
My budget just tops over $100 million a year. $100 million.
And what was it when you arrived?
$41
million. $41
million. Yes.
So that's a 60% increase.
It should be. There's a lot of new buildings out there.
Actually, it wouldn't be a 60% increase. It'd be more like a 150% increase, a 60% decrease if it went the other way. But it's an amazing juggernaut now. It has to be fed. I'm not sure the university could withstand 8 losing seasons in 11 years now on the football field.
I have no recollection of that, and nor do I. It's a black hole in my mind right now. I don't go there. But LSU is, in fact, an international juggernaut. I was just recently overseas, and countless number of LSU caps and shirts and catcalls like "Go Tigers." Go to hell, Ole Miss. I mean, you'd hear.
Yeah, well, wherever you go. Charlie Roberts has been on this show, and he says in San Diego, that's where they have the biggest alumni gatherings.
Right.
You've been to those?
I have. I've been when I was on active duty, I went to one. Charlie and I work very closely together on many. In fact, this weekend, we're going together to, along with Skip Bertman, as a matter of fact, going to North Louisiana to make a swing up there to talk about LSU athletics and LSU.
Scott and Gonzalez. Scott, good morning. You're on the air with General Ron Richard.
Good morning. My son's in the Marines right now. Right now he's in Okinawa. He's in the infantry. I'm kind of concerned about what kind of future he's going to have after he gets out, because being in the infantry, he doesn't get a lot of training as far as extracurricular career opportunities, and he stated that. He's trying to do a slide right now where he tries to get into another branch of the Marines, maybe into the air traffic control. But what's your suggestion for him right now in the Marines to try to get some type of training so he can succeed in this secular job?
Very good question. My particular MOS was infantry also. I was both infantry and artillery, and in both of those, there's not a lot of demand for those two particular services outside of the Marine Corps. One thing he will gain, though, he will gain leadership. He will gain the knowledge of what it takes to be successful when he's dealing face-to-face with men. And I think he takes that and he brings that to the civilian side. And when he interviews with a potential company, he accents that particular issue, that he deals directly with men. The biggest fallacy, a fault that I found when I retired from the Marine Corps was the lack of leadership in certain areas of the civilian world. And I say that realizing that I could be criticized for saying that. But from my experience in the Marine Corps versus my experience when I first got out and looking around different companies, I was amazed how successful some of these men and women were that didn't possess, in my view, a lot of leadership.
Nutrition Center for Athletes. When I was in school, there was Broussard Hall. Soon we're going to have a variation of that, aren't we? What's going on with this?
This is an idea that has started to resurrect itself not long after the training table that used to be a mandatory part of an athlete while in college. What this is intended to be, it's near the Football Operations Center. It's going to be for all athletes, all 400 and some odd athletes. It's going to be a place where they will take two meals a day. There'll be a nutritionist there. There'll be a chef of sorts in the back, several of them that know how to cook. Instead of getting through with baseball or track or football and going out to just get a Big Mac,
which is what happens now,
or some other type of hamburger. Yes, that's what happens now. They will be marched into this dining facility, and depending on whether you have to gain weight, lose weight, stay where you are, that meal will be prepared for you to maintain where the coaches think you should be. In fact, it'll be healthy for the young men and women. There'll also be a lounge there where they can hang out.
Where will it be?
It'll be adjacent the Football Operations Center.
And price tag?
Price tag is approximately $10 million.
$10 million. And will it be for all athletes?
All athletes will have an opportunity to go. In fact, anybody will have an opportunity to go for one meal.
So if I enroll in school as a grad student, I can go
have
dinner with the general and the athletes, right?
I don't know if you want to eat with me, but you can come on down.
I certainly want to eat with you. Dirk asks, were you in school when Pete Maravich was at LSU?
Yes, I was. Pete was a freshman, and I was a junior. And we would watch him. We'd go to the Cow Palace and watch the junior varsity team warm up the sweet Georgia Brown. And it was a show. The Cow Palace was packed. As soon as the varsity team got through playing ball, the Cow Palace was empty. Everybody would leave. Everybody went to see Pete Maravich, and then he went on to stardom in his own right as a varsity player.
And in 3 years on the varsity at LSU, he scored 3,667 points, still an NCAA record, an average 44.2 points per game. Still,
Without a three-point shot.
Without a three-point shot.
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
Yeah, he was the real deal. Unfortunately, not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame because he does not have a degree from LSU, and I don't think Pete's going to get one. So should we have an exception for him?
Probably that would be an accepted exception, I would think. Quite frankly, personally, I would vote for that.
Yeah, I think once a guy is no longer with us, and after all, the Athletic Hall of Fame is in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center where you work, and yet his name's on the building, but he's not in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. We need to do something about that. I mentioned the five presidents you served with, but I guess in reality, when you've signed up, Johnson was still in office, wasn't he?
1968, yes.
Yeah, LBJ. Mm-hmm. And when you finished, I guess it was right at the start of Bush 43.
I retired 2001.
Well, that would have been the start of Bush 43. So that's seven presidents you served under. Which, any one stick out?
I was not of the ilk to rub shoulders with the presidents. I met several of them. They from afar. And from a close, they all acted very similarly towards the military. I honestly could not differentiate one from the other, although President Bush, the elder, seemed to take a personal interest in individuals. Not me, but in other soldiers and sailors and airmen and Coast Guardmen. Along with Marines, he seemed to take a personal interest when he had the opportunity.
Well, and of the seven you mentioned, he's the one who saw the biggest action in war.
Correct. Yes, I think he knew the not the character is the wrong word, but I think he knew the baggage, which is probably a better word, that a combat soldier, Marine carries.
Well, General, thank you for your service to our country and to our alma mater.
Go Tigers. We're going to have a tough schedule, but we're going to maintain this year.
General will be in Dallas August 31st.
I'll be there.
With several thousand of his closest friends. Thank you, sir. Let's do it again. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi. God bless America.
And stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.